You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday, the 22nd of August, 2022, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, before we get into the news article for today, I'll just start with a brief comment on the assassination of Alexander Dugin's daughter. This happened over the weekend, and it's being reported in the West that Alexander Dugin was a huge influence on Putin. He's the mastermind behind the military operation in Ukraine. None of this is true. Dugin is well known in Russia, but he's not a big influence on Putin. He's not a big player. He certainly would not have even had the sort of security that politicians have. And it's very strange that this assassination attempt was made against him. If listeners are interested in learning about Alexander Dugin, we have quite a few podcasts talking about him that Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson has produced. And because Dr. Johnson is fluent in the written language of Russian, he's actually read Alexander Dugin's work in Russian, and he says that a lot of his stuff gets mistranslated and people misunderstand what he is saying. When people say that he is anti-white, he's not anti-white. He talks about Eurasianism. He talks about the fact that Russia has always been a multi-ethnic empire. He's not a white nationalist, but he is against the progressive liberalism that we see. He is against the New World Order, globalism, all that sort of thing. He has spoken at nationalist conferences, and it's just very strange that he would be picked out for an assassination. I mean, perhaps it was enemies that he had within Russia, or I mean, it could have been Ukraine. I mean, the guy is a philosopher, not a warmonger, but a philosopher. And he was also an Orthodox Christian. So it's very strange what has gone on there. The murder of his daughter, looks like it was supposed to have been him. And if people want to learn about Alexander Dugin, I think Radio Albion is the best place to do so, because Dr. Johnson is the only scholar that can actually read his work in Russian, and is quite an authority on him, in actual fact. Well, to get into the news article that I want to talk about today, it's about the replacement of not just white people, but the replacement of straight women, even, in these adaptations of historical events that we see on the television. In the latest example of historical revisionism being used to erase women by the woke LGBTQ plus movement, a scholar has claimed that Queen Elizabeth I of England was non-binary. So they're claiming that she was neither male nor female, identifying as both. And we included Queen Elizabeth I as one of our greatest Britons. The great thing that she did was that she managed to fulfill a traditionally male role. And under her, there was quite a renaissance in the arts in the country. And she was put forward as the Virgin Queen, a queen that never got married. And people looked up to her. They even saw her as being similar to Mary, the mother of Jesus, always being a virgin. Which is quite the opposite of claiming that somebody is non-binary, doesn't identify as male or female. If you are the Queen of England, then she had to do some things in a male role, because royalty is traditionally a male role. It goes to the eldest male. If it doesn't go to the eldest male, you can't find an eldest male, then it goes to the next in line, that is a female. And that's what went on here, and she was just fulfilling her role the best that she could. Sometimes she would point this out, that she was a female, but she was trying to fill a male role. That is not the same as changing your pronouns and claiming to be neither male nor female and not interested in either male or female either. Along with the announcement from Shakespeare's Globe Theatre that they have cast St. Joan of Arc as a gender-neutral character in an upcoming play, Dr. Kit Higham penned a blog post for the theatre's website earlier this month defending why it was necessary to use modern gender theory when looking at the past. So they're also going after St. Joan of Arc, trying to portray her as not having any gender at all when she was a female. She led the French in battle after a vision, and she was sainted, I think, a couple of hundred years ago. She's a great French hero. She's certainly not gender neutral. She's female. And this follows on, really, from this replacement of white people with black actors throughout history. And what we also see is the gayification of people throughout history, and the homosexual lobby will try to find people in the past and claim that they must have been homosexual. And what they're doing now is they're trying to claim that people are gender neutral, non-binary, etc. Whereas this homosexual lifestyle never really existed in the past. It never really existed until modern times. Even when you look back at the Greeks, if you look back at Athens, they had wives, and they would sleep with young boys. It wasn't tolerated. It was completely illegal, but that would go on. But there wasn't a lifestyle that went with it. That is a modern thing, a completely modern idea. Dr. Higham, who describes himself as a trans awareness trainer with they, them, or he, him pronouns, said St. Joan was not the only historical example of LGBTQ plus figures, claiming that the 10th century ruler Æthelflæd, Lady of the Mercians, and Queen Elizabeth I of England were both transgender. And Æthelflæd is another of our greatest Britons. If listeners want to find out about these two ladies, I suggest they look up the Greatest Britons archive rather than listening to this Dr. Higham here. And Æthelflæd again led an army. It was after King Alfred died, and he had sort of allied the country together, allied Wessex with Mercia, and we had the Saxon kingdom and then the Danelaw up above. Well, she really consolidated that. And again, she was fulfilling a male role because she was the only person that could fulfill that role. You had to have a king, and if you couldn't have a king, then you had to have a queen. And it was a British tradition that we could have queens. The Saxon tradition was that you couldn't, but the British tradition was that you could actually have queens. So I guess that by this time, they had taken that on. In fact, no, they hadn't, because they call her the Lady of the Mercians rather than Queen Æthelflæd. So with the Saxon tradition, you couldn't actually have a queen. So she led the Mercians, because she was the ruler, basically, but they couldn't actually give her a title. It wasn't until the Normans came in that you could actually have queens. The Saxons wouldn't allow it. There's an interesting story about why they wouldn't allow it that's in the life of Alfred the Great. Dr. Higham wrote, Æthelflæd, who governed Mercia after the death of their husband, was later described as conducting armies as if she had changed her sex. To take on a male-coded military role was, in some sense, for Æthelflæd to become male. Well, she wasn't becoming male. I mean, they were just pointing this out as a tribute to her by saying that she was as good as a man at conducting the armies. And this is the thing. You get women that can do certain things as well as men, such as conducting an army, and they are the exception to the rule. It doesn't mean that the rule doesn't exist. I mean, everybody is really sort of kind of on a spectrum. It doesn't mean that they're gender neutral or they're bisexual or anything like that. It just means that we do have the ability to be feminine as well as masculine within us. It doesn't mean that we're the wrong gender trapped in a different body and we should be modifying the body. I mean, what it really means is if you're in a sense feminine, then it means that when you look for a partner, you should look for a female with maybe more masculine traits. Or if you're a female with masculine traits, maybe you might like a male with feminine traits, rather than engaging in homosexuality. I mean, this is what I think anyway. Sometimes you get these transsexuals that actually get together, and you get a male presenting as a female together with a female presenting as a male. And in actual fact, it's a heterosexual relationship, just with people that choose to present as the opposite sex. And I think that is really what these people are supposed to be doing, rather than engaging in homosexuality. But getting back to this here, she did conduct the armies as good as any male did. And that's why she is famous as the Lady of Mercia. Elizabeth I similarly described themselves regularly in speeches as king, queen, and prince, choosing strategically to emphasise their female identity or their male monarchical role at different points, he added. Inhabiting that social role and dressing in the clothes associated with it while living and working among men may not just have felt like gendered defiance, it may have had a profound impact on their sense of self. I don't think she was being defiant at all. I don't think she really thought about gender, just that if she was carrying out a role, say, as overseeing an execution, then she would do that and refer to herself as the king rather than as the queen, because she didn't want to insult femininity by thinking that women would be doing such a thing as overseeing an execution. And she was extremely feminine. She certainly wasn't trying to have the mannerisms of a man. Nobody ever mentioned that about her. And she was held up as this great example of femininity in Elizabethan England. Born in 1533, Elizabeth I was one of the longest serving rulers in British history, behind only Queen Victoria and her namesake Queen Elizabeth II, the current reigning monarch. She was famed for her success as a military commander, defeating the powerful Spanish Armada, as for her devotion to England, purportedly remaining a virgin her entire life because she was married to the English people. She was married to the nation, and she saw the nation as being the most important thing, and the ethno-nation, that is, she saw the nation as being her ethnicity. There was an incident where there were black slaves that were actually in the country, and she was most upset at this because these black slaves were being cared for, they were being employed, they were being fed, while there were white Englishmen that were unemployed, that were not being used as slaves and were not being fed. So she demanded that they be removed from the country, and she said that the loyalty has to be to the nation first, rather than outsiders. I do recommend people check out the Greatest Britain's episode on Elizabeth I. It was a very, very interesting chapter in it, when you get to this bit with this tiny little black community that there was within Britain. They were all deported. I mean, she wrote three letters demanding that they be deported, that anybody that didn't go along with that should be punished, that the funds should be provided in order to do this, and she actually recommended that there was one particular person that should be doing the job, who had helped to rescue Englishmen from Spain. And the second point here is where they're saying that she had great success as a military commander. That's not actually true. She didn't really have too many military episodes within her life. The Spanish Armada was defeated, but not because of her strategizing, I don't think. It was because of Sir Francis Drake, and also because of the weather. And the weather has always come in handy in Britain. If you think back to Julius Caesar, I mean, he was defeated twice, and it was because there were storms in the Channel. And we defeated the Spanish Armada again because of storms in the Channel. Basically, it wasn't because she was a great military commander, but because she was actually the queen at that time when the Spanish Armada was defeated, I guess she is well known for that success. There have long been conspiracy theories surrounding her gender, such as the one promoted by 19th century Dracula author Bram Stoker, which posited that Queen Elizabeth I cut such a masculine figure because she was in fact a man, and that the real Elizabeth had died as a child and was replaced by a boy with similar features. And obviously that's just a fantasy. As I say, it's supposed to be a tribute to her to say that she did her job as well as a man. If you were to say that today, you would be accused of being sexist. But to be saying that 200 years ago, it would have been seen as flattery. I mean, there's one of the Gnostic Gospels where it's talking about Mary Magdalene, and it talks about making Mary into a man, making her into a male. And it's because women were looked upon as being lower than men, but not being able to do the things that men do. So if you were to say that a woman could do what a man does, and does it just as well, then that's basically complimenting the woman. It's not saying that they're bi-curious or transgender or anything like that. The Bisley Boy theory attempted to explain why she remained a virgin throughout her life and was able to command such respect militarily. However, the theory was based on merely circumstantial evidence, with many counterfactuals, such as her having been inspected by doctors to determine if she could bear children. Well, she didn't marry, and she did have a lot of suitors, and there were people that tried to get her to marry. Back then, you had all these dynastic arranged marriages. If you were in royalty, people would want to marry you off to somebody else of equal royalty so that alliances were formed. And obviously with the Queen of England, there would have been many royals that wanted to marry her so that they could have become the King of England, basically, so that their children could have inherited the throne. Royalty has always had these arranged marriages, and she had lots of suitors. And it was not common for somebody to have sex outside of marriage back then. You had men that remained celibate until they got married. And women would have been expected to remain celibate until they got married as well. So it's not out of the realms of possibility for her to have remained a virgin throughout her life. It's just that we would look at that now and say, well, that would be difficult to do today. So we're basically projecting modern sensibilities onto the past by claiming that. Ironically, some gender-critical feminists have noted that the woke LGBTQ plus view of history is actually gender conservative, in that it assumes that women cannot do manly things. And that's a good viewpoint to take. I mean, they look at these women, they say, well, they're doing something that a man would do, therefore they must have been bi-curious, bisexual, agender, or whatever the word is, when women can do certain manly things. I mean, they may not have men's body strength, but they can lead armies. I mean, women do have a temper. They have anger and aggression there. It's just that they don't have the bodily strength in order to carry it out. Thankfully, I think in some instances, women are tend to be more aggressive than men. But women can certainly do manly things. It doesn't mean that they were gender neutral or trans curious or anything like that. Philosopher Dr. Jane Clare Jones told The Telegraph, "This is a really great example of the inherent gender conservatism in gender identity ideology. Traditional gender conservatism says that men must do manly things and women must do womanly things. Gender identity ideology reverses that, and we end up with the idea that anyone who does manly things must be a man, and anyone who does womanly things must be a woman." And this goes on as well with the trans agenda, doesn't it? if a little boy starts playing with girls' toys, they'll say, oh, well, that must be because the little boy is really a trans kid and we should be encouraging them to use the opposite gender's pronouns. And really, it's just because children like to play with toys. I mean, as I pointed out earlier, we all have the ability to be either masculine or feminine. We're not stuck within one of these things. There are things that are traditionally associated with women and things that are traditionally associated with men. They're not exclusive to one another. And what this gay agenda does is it looks at this throughout history. It says if anybody was doing, any male was doing something that is normally associated with a woman, then they must have been homosexual. If a woman's doing anything that is normally associated with men, then they must be transgender. And it's really reducing men and women down to just literally not be their, just literally being their gender and not being able to be anything else. Whereas today we're supposed to think men can do women's things and women can do men's things. Yet we seem to have this rigid idea that if that happened in the past, it must be because they are a different, one of these 100 different genders that we're told that we have. This is how we end up in a situation in which historical women who have performed traditionally masculine roles end up being recategorized as trans men or non-binary or not women in some way. This is a really regressive message to be sending out, especially to young women. And it does. I mean, it encourages them to think that they're trans or whatever. I mean, young women get uncertain as they're going through adolescence and unsure of themselves, as do young boys, and they're very vulnerable at that age. And if you start telling them that what they're doing is signs that they may be trans or signs that they may be homosexual, they might end up thinking that and doing something that they might reject when they're older. Feminist author Joan Smith added, "Women and girls are entitled to reject stereotypes without losing our sex. We didn't have enough female role models to start with. We have spent decades rediscovering women artists, authors, and leaders, and now a regressive ideology is trying to take them away." I guess you can really sort of link this also to the trans agenda with these trans going into women's sports and beating them at women's sports, where we've said that men are no different to women and a man dressed up as a woman is just the same as a woman. And this is a similar thing that's going on here, where you look back in the past and they say, well, if a woman was carrying out a male role, then they must have been transgender. And it's taking these role models away from women and giving them to transgenders and giving them to homosexuals so that they can carry out their agenda. Now, I have another article here that I want to reference before I finish up. And this is at the conservativewoman.co.uk website, which I highly recommend. It is genuinely conservative. It's a great website, great articles that they have on there. And there's one on there about this Joan of Arc and the queering of Joan of Arc, which Anne Widdecombe has complained about. Various people have complained about this, where they portray Joan of Arc as a big, sweaty, queer revolution, rebellion, festival of like joy. So they were evidently excited by St. Joan's attire in battle. Like men, she wore armor, though for protection, rather than as a statement of sexual identity. A point which has been missed by the writers, who have chosen to portray the woman who was consecrated in virginity to God as a non-binary queer who refers to herself using they, them pronouns. So this is really very insulting when you've got women that have taken a vow that they're going to remain a virgin, and then they're held up as a hero of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender and queer community. But the point I wanted to raise here is that the author brings up somebody from history that really actually was part of the homosexual, lesbian, gay, bi, transgender types at the time. He says, "I would love the Globe or the Roundabout Theatre to prove me wrong. I'd even be happy to help them. So here's a challenge. What about a production about the Roman Emperor Nero?" he is acknowledged as one of the most evil men in history. He murdered his mother, raped and murdered his brother, decapitated his first wife, and gave her head to his mistress as a trophy before marrying her and kicking her to death when she was heavily pregnant. Regretting his murder of wife number two, Nero then procured a boy who looked just like her, but castrated him to retain his youthful looks before giving him his wife's name and marrying him too. He offered riches to anyone able to give his catamite a full sex change, including the successful implantation of a uterus. And this was just his private life. So, of course, the LGBTQ lobby is going back through history, trying to find heroes that they can then claim were homosexual or transgender, when we actually have homosexuals and transgenders in history, but most of them are of the type like Nero. Continuing here, Nero presents the example of a very contemporary man-woman thing with new and exciting things to say about children's rights, sexual liberation, no-fault divorce, abortion rights, trans rights, gay marriage, and gay families. Surely all vitally important causes. The theatre would have the additional defence that they lack in their depictions of St. Joan of Arc and all the others who will follow her in the rewriting of history, because in the case of Nero, all of these deeds were recorded as true. I can't wait. Well, I doubt very much whether they will be doing that, because they only want to portray positive portrayals of these people from history that they're trying to claim are homosexual. I mean, I've even heard them trying to claim that King David from the Old Testament was homosexual. They just have this drive to push these ideas onto everyone else and to change history. And I know most of the time we talk about the diversification of history, where they're replacing white people with black people, not just in the television productions, but also in our histories. They try to claim that North African Romans were in actual fact sub-Saharan Negroes, for instance. But there's not just that. There is this attempt to homosexualize people from the past as well, and claim that they were in actual fact part of the gay community, when no such thing existed back then. There was no gay community. Sodomy was punishable by death, so you didn't have a community of people that engaged in that. Most of the time, sodomy was used as a form of expressing dominance over somebody else. It was a dominance and submission thing, the same as happens in prisons today, unfortunately. It was not a sign of love, as the homosexual lobby would have it today. It was a sign of dominance and submission. And of course, I'm talking about this just to highlight the way that our history is being subverted. I'm not talking about it to encourage people to hate any of the members of these communities. They themselves are not really responsible for what's going on here. It's these liberal progressive types that are rewriting history, and they're doing that because that's what they've been fed at our universities. Well, that's another story. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.